dance on the air. We're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're back, we're dads on the air.
Yeah, so welcome to Dad's on the Air for the 22nd of December 2009. The year is nearly over. This is the Merry Christmas show. We're all in a jolly mood here.
Merry Christmas, John. Yes, we are indeed.
And that is the, what's that word for unable to extinguish? Inextinguishable.
Indomitable, perhaps?
Indomitable, there you go. Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Yes, Merry Christmas, everybody.
And on a more subdued, more humble and more decent note.
A much more quieter welcome to Christmas.
Yes. Is our much-loved Phil York.
Thanks,
Dads
John.
In Distress. So,
thank you. Good morning, everyone. And season's greetings.
Season's greetings. And we're going to do a little sort of flip around the country and around Australia and get various people from the various fatherhood groups around the country to say hello and wish everyone a Merry Christmas and give a little synopsis of the main events of 2009 and what we can expect for 2010. Of course, there's been a lot of debate over family law reform in Australia, and we are the media outlet which has covered these things over recent years in more detail than anyone else. Fortunately, the shows are recorded in the National Library of Australia and will be quite a resource for researchers to in years to come.
Absolutely.
Hopefully, they will look back with astonishment at the appalling way that fathers were treated by government institutions in the early part of the millennium. And it will all be history, and men and women alike will be treated equally and with decency and dignity. So let's just hope.
Yeah, hear, hear.
Now, so we'll be talking with Sue Price from the Men's Rights Agency, Ed Dabrowski from the Shared Parenting Council Australia, Barry Williams from the Lone Fathers Association, Warwick Marsh from the Fatherhood Organisation, and of course Phil from Dads in Distress. Phil, you got some news over there.
I do, John, thank you. One news item here from yesterday's Australian by Natasha Bitter. Headline reads, "Suicide the main cause of death for Australians aged 15 to 34.
That's pretty shocking.
It is, isn't it? You know, that's a headline, absolutely. Young Australians are more likely to kill themselves than die from an illness or accident, the health department has told a Senate inquiry into suicide. This is a very important inquiry, actually, because they're covering lots of different aspects in regards to suicide in Australia, and hopefully at the end of this inquiry they will have a report which will once and for all sort out these issues around suicide.
Dads on the Air has always maintained that government institutions such as the Child Support Agency are very, very closely linked with the high male suicide rate in Australia, and the constant bullying, harassment and financial and emotional persecution by these bodies, including the family court, are a direct contributor to the high death rate. Over 5,000 people, clients of the Child Support Agency have died since Kevin Rudd became Prime Minister. No inquiry, no nothing.
Yep, and just to get back to this article, Natasha writes, the number of suicides has plunged 30% in a decade to 1,881 in the most recent year of data, which is 2007. Yet more people kill themselves each year than die of skin cancer or in car crashes. In its submission to the Senate inquiry, the Health Department says suicide is the main cause of death for Australians aged 15 to 34. What this article doesn't cover is the misreporting of suicide in Australia. For instance, as I've mentioned on this show before, if someone decides to throw themselves off a bridge, that is not classed as suicide, it's classed as death by multiple injuries. If a single occupant car travels into a tree at a great rate of knots, that also is not suicide. That is just a tragic accident, according to the statistics. So with this Senate inquiry underway, all those sorts of issues are being looked at and addressed with the coroners as to how they report deaths within Australia, and hopefully we will get a clearer, better understanding of exactly how much the suicide rate is in Australia. I will bet everything I own that it is far more than 1,881.
Yeah, no, that's completely and utterly tragic. And the fact that they spend so much money on the road toll and, you know, various cancers and everything, and completely ignore, pretty much. You know, you've got organisations like Beyond Blue that are active, but in terms of government policy, we don't see anything. There's no action on this, which they're now saying is the greatest killer of young Australians. I mean, that's disgraceful. That's horrifying.
It's also something of a myth to say that it's young people who are suiciding. The youth suicide rate has been in decline, and there's been a huge number of quite successful programs directed at young people. And the highest suicide rates in Australia are all directly linked to males in the divorce age bracket.
And that's right, 25 to 44.
Yeah, that's the group that is killing themselves in unbelievable numbers. And as Phil has pointed out, some of this tightening of the figures is due to a reclassification or a tightening up of what is regarded as suicide. You can swim out to sea 5 miles and drown. And, of course, coincidentally, drownings are in Australia also peak in the divorced male age bracket. And so many other categories are also divorced male age bracket. Is the category, knocking themselves off.
Yeah.
Ian, you've been too quiet for too long.
Yeah, no, look, I've got some good news for a change. Suburbs glowing with the spirit of Christmas, it is written in the this morning's Telegraph. Whether they flash or twinkle are in the shape of Santa or the nativity scene, Sydney is sparkling with the spirit of Christmas thanks to thousands of creative light displays. The Daily Telegraph has been flooded with pictures of readers, Christmas lights displayed, and you just have to drive around Sydney in the evening to see that the place is positively glowing, that people are basically investing in these trinkets to hang off their dwellings to get flashing at each other at night, and it does give the place a very festive feel, and I think it's a very good thing, personally.
Yeah, I wonder how long it'll continue after the new costs for electricity come into place.
Yeah, well, that's the other side of it. We are celebrating that we didn't get the emissions trading scheme through. Kevin Rudd failed that, and of course, the whole Copenhagen thing fell to bits. So, hey, we might be able to burn our Christmas lights for years and years and years to come.
Let's hope.
All right, so we'll be back in a moment. And we'll be talking with Phil here about Christmas, how to cope, the good, the bad, and the truly ugly. We'll be back.
All right, Jermaine, it's time for little Bow Wow to go to sleep. Santa
ain't going to sleep.
Why, man?
You hear me?
Yeah, Bow Wow, you got to go to sleep, man. Santa on his way,
man. I said that time.
Why y'all ain't going to sleep then? Ain't no damn Santa Claus.
Excuse me?
He coming. I'ma see him when y'all see him. You heard? Holla.
Saying, man, he just paged me, yo. You better go to sleep.
Holla, so, child, so dead.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. Uh-huh. There is just one thing I need.
Why is that?
And we're talking with Phil York from Dads of Distress, does a lot of wonderful work around Sydney here. Phil, what advice can you offer for people during this festive, not always festive season?
Yeah, thanks, John. And you're right, mate, it isn't always a festive season. You know, for the general population, Christmas is a time for family. It's a time for everyone to get together. Sometimes it's the only time during the year that the family does get together. So, you know, that in itself can cause its own difficulties. Let's talk about being a separated dad and what that is like during this time of year. For anyone who is separated in the last 12 months, they will find this time of year difficult. There's no question about that.
Yeah, absolutely. This could be the worst time of year. Give or take the kids' birthdays, perhaps.
Yeah, that's it. Father's Day. Yeah. You know, these are all critical points, especially within that first 12 months. And I guess in saying that, in some respect, it does get a little bit easier. You know, I've been a separated dad for 13 years now, and in some sense, it does get a little bit easier. But the main thing to remember here, as far as I see, is that, you know, if you're doing it tough, reach out, you know, reach out to people around you, to your own
support. To your ex.
No. Well, you know, if you can to your ex, great, you know, but unfortunately, especially in the early days of separation, it's too emotional.
I was talking to a separated bloke yesterday, and he was just freshly separated like a couple of weeks, and his former wife was keeping the kid from him right up until 4 p.m. On Christmas Day, which is out of the court order.
Yep.
And he was fairly upset about all that, and really, you know, she was just doing it to aggravate him. Mm-hmm. And I was just saying, you know, I think it was good advice to not to fight, just to, she's only doing it to provoke him. And yep, a lot of this really sick behaviour around denying, you know, the other partner contact with the children is just really sick and meant to get a rise out of you.
Absolutely.
Do not react.
And yeah, that's it. You're basically, you know, playing their game by reacting. I think, you know, a couple of important things to remember here is, number one, even if you do get to see your children and it is 4 p.m. on Christmas Day, well, you're a lot luckier than other guys. Mm. And more importantly, you know, everyone puts this emphasis on the 25th of December. Well, for me, Christmas is a feeling. It's not a day. It's not a date. You know, it's a feeling. And if that means that, you know, you have your children, you know, a week after or a month after, or you know, perhaps you won't see them for 6 months, that feeling can still be there when you do see them. You know, it's a matter of, you know, hanging on to that goodwill, hanging on to the gifts. If you've got the resources to get your children's gifts after you've gone through the separation process, and it's just important just to realise that, you know, Christmas doesn't necessarily have to be on the 25th of December. It is just a day, a feeling, an emotion. It's a period where you can get together with your family. Now, whether that happens on Friday or whether that happens on Monday or whenever it happens, that feeling can still be there, because it's all about, you know, giving of yourself with your family, having a great time, and that doesn't necessarily have to be Friday.
Yeah, and it's best to avoid spending Christmas Day by yourself if you are a separated father, because then, you know, if you're just sitting there by yourself,
well, stewing on many injustices.
Yeah, that's you're just making life hard for yourself. And if you're freshly separated, you may not feel like company, and you might think that your company's not, you know, you don't want to ruin other people's Christmas. But no, make the effort, and people will help you, and you know, you're better off with other people around than sitting there by yourself in your own little flat or whatever, drinking beer by yourself, watching television, you know, pining for your kids.
Yeah, you know, it is tough, and as John said, well, you know, I can talk personally here. I've been separated now for 5 weeks, and, you know, we were going to do Christmas together, and about an hour and a half ago, we've decided that, no, we're not going to do Christmas together, you know. So it is a tough, tough period. But, you know, as was said here earlier, it's just a matter of, you know, getting through this moment, getting on with it, and you know, reaching out if you need that support.
Not sitting at home staring at the wall pile of mouldering child support agency letters, and those people have so much to answer for.
Yeah, and avoid gin and scotch. Gin especially bad for the emotions, and scotch makes you go crazy. So avoid gin and scotch.
And it's a time of peace and goodwill, and I think really in some ways being the absolute gentleman, or being, you know, very not showing that you're hurt by any of the behavior of the other person, is really being taking the high moral ground, really. Yep. And just being non-confrontational, and just, you know, a lot of behavior is only done to try and provoke the other person, and if you don't rise to the challenge or don't rise to the occasion.
Exactly. And, you know, it all comes back to what I try and keep in the forefront of my mind. It's that it's not the separation which hurts and damages children. It's the conflict around that separation. So if you can separate yourself from that conflict, and don't buy into the little emotional games, you know, work it out. You know what it is. You know that it's just an emotional ploy. You see it as that, and you just acknowledge it as that, and it allows you to move on. Because if you start entering into the tit for tat game, it just becomes awful, you know. And then no one has a nice Christmas. Your kids suffer, and you know, as dads, that's the last thing we really want. You know, we are all hurting, and if you start playing these emotional games at any time, regardless of whether it's Christmas or not, it will end up damaging the kids more so than if you don't. So, you know, it's important to sort of realise that it is just an emotional state, and it's a very emotional time. Everyone wants to have their family around them at Christmas. For some of us, we will get that. For others, we won't. But, you know, 12 months down the track, next Christmas, it could be a totally different situation. It depends on what you do as a parent between now and in 12 months' time. So, you know, what is necessarily going to happen this year isn't the same for next year.
Of course, the Rudd government, a left-wing Labor government here in Australia, is moving against the shared parenting legislation, which encouraged contact between fathers and children after separation. Do you think that that's having an impact amongst the people that Dads in Distress deals with, that there's a sort of feeling that not just the world, but the government is against them?
There is a percentage of that, John, absolutely. But, you know, I think it's a matter of just wait and see at this point. You know, there's lots of whispers about, you know, it's all going to be rolled back, and, you know, dads will see less of their children, et cetera, et cetera. You know, if that happens, well, then we as a community will have to deal with that once it does happen. But, you know, getting into all this, you know, oh, it's going to happen and all these dark clouds are coming over us, it's only going to get us in the wrong frame of mind as far as I'm concerned. You know, you got to look at it in a positive light. You know, I know lots more dads in the last 2 years that get to see their children more regularly than fathers that have separated maybe 7 or 8 years ago and have gone through the older system. So, you know, for that, I'm thankful. The children are certainly thankful, and you know, mum and dad ultimately are thankful as well, because, you know, their children will benefit from having more significant care with both parents. Now, if the government decides that is wrong, for whatever reason, well, then we as a community need to stand up and deal with that. You know, if it's wrong and the government sees it as that, well, obviously, you know, they're going to lose a lot of votes from that as well, mate, because we know it's right, but there is certainly a very strong swell of emotion from women's groups that are basically behind this rollback.
Swell of emotion, aka vicious hysteria. Very nasty, some of the stuff that the Rudd government has played into on all of this. We might talk with Sue Price about some of that later in the show. We'll be back in a moment.
bells will be ringing this sad, sad news. Me greeting once again. Choirs will be singing silent night. Christmas carol by candlelight. Please come home for Christmas. Please come home for Christmas. Not for Christmas, by New Year's night. Friends and relations, send salutation. Sure as the stars shine above, oh, this is Christmas. Yes, Christmas, my dear. Time of year to be with the one you love. So won't you tell me you'll never more roam. Christmas and New Year will find you home. There'll be no more sorrow, no grief and pain. Happy, happy once again.
So fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back.
And Merry Christmas to you, Sue Price.
Good morning, John. Merry Christmas to everybody and Happy New Year. And I hope it's a safe one. And I hope all your listeners have good contact with their kids.
Ah, thanks very much. Yes, well, not all of them do. What advice can you offer to, well, those who don't, for a start?
To those who don't, well, there's not a great deal that can be done at this late stage. If you've got any contact at all, of course, you know, make the best of it. If you don't have any contact, write a letter to your children or send an email. You know, eventually that might get through, and at least they will know later on that you were thinking about them, and I'm sure they were thinking about you, about their dad. You know, there's a lot of information coming to light about children and their needs. Did you see that little story that came in from the US where a little boy had tried to actually get himself locked up in jail? A four-year-old?
No.
Oh, he was found wandering in the street. He'd stolen some Christmas presents from the neighbours. He dressed up in a dress and he had a can of beer in his hand. And the reason was he was living with his single mother, or with his mother. He wanted to spend Christmas with his dad, and dad was in jail.
Oh, that's tragic.
Isn't that tragic? Oh. Absolutely brought tears to my eyes when I read it, I can tell you.
Oh.
that's the heartstring tug of a four-year-old boy who loves his dad.
Oh, that's terrible. Any more tear jerkers there?
Sorry, John. I just thought it was such an endorsement of you know, a child's need to be with their dad. Yeah, they need both parents, but they desperately need their fathers if their fathers aren't there all the time.
And why do so many women, particularly at this time of year, use the children against the other parent? Well, it's not only women. I don't want to make that aspersion. But parents do it to each other.
Without becoming gender enhanced.
Yeah.
I think we're... unfortunately, it is, again, it's a power situation. They talk about power and control in domestic violence, but the greatest power a woman has is the control of the children.
Mm.
Well, it's one of the greatest powers. There is another one, but I won't go into that here.
What's that? Allure, sexual appeal.
I'll leave it to your imagination.
Drives all crazy, you do.
The children, if a woman controls the children and what the children do, she has absolute control over the father. And we see a lot of dads saying to mum, please can I see them, instead of being a little more assertive and saying, look, the children, it's the children's time with me, I'm coming to pick them up now. They're making an announcement that they're going to be there. So I think if any dads are listening and they're a bit nervous about ringing up and seeing when they're going to see the children, they need to do so with some conviction. They need to actually say, I'm coming around at 2 o'clock after you've had lunch, you'll be finished by then, won't you, to collect John or Mary or Joe or whatever it is.
Mm.
And I'll have them back to you by whatever time it's going to be. And that's the approach. Don't give her time to say no to you.
Right. That's interesting.
It really is. You do have to be positive and you do have to take the lead on these things. And dads have got to realise that they have... They must uphold their children's right to have contact with them. That's what dads do. And the only way you can do that sometimes, it's not a matter of asking permission of the mother to have contact with your child. That's got nothing to do with it. She doesn't have that right to deny you permission. So you really have to assume that you are going to have contact and take that contact. You know, it's sort of say, I'm going to come round. I expect the children to be ready. I'll pick them up at that time. I'll have them back at this time.
It's
so
all
no misunderstandings.
Yeah, well, you know, that's all good if mum wants to be compassionate and understanding and allow that to happen, as you know, Sue. But unfortunately, some don't. Some see this time of year as being an opportunity to stick that knife in and give it a bit of a twist.
Yeah, I understand that, but to overcome that, you have to take the first step forward, which is saying, which is being a little more proactive and being a little bit more positive about your role in your child's life.
Yep.
Unfortunately, a lot of dads are so browbeaten into submission virtually by the system and by what the mum is demanding, that they forget that they're there for their child and to protect their child, and they need to stand up and they need to sort of say, that's not how it's going to be. I don't have to ask your permission. We do have to reach agreement. You should be saying, you should be agreeing because that's in the best interest of our child. And you know, you have to be positive about it. If you keep asking, may I, can I, you're opening the door for her to say, no, you may not.
Mm. You know,
it's just a subtle difference in the way you approach it.
Right. And what about if the answer is just the same, no, go away?
Well, then I'm afraid it's
I'll call the police if you come near me, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, well, then it's off to court, or you make sure that you take someone with you if you're calling around to try and collect the children. That's the part. If you're going to breach a mother for contravening the orders, you must have clear evidence of each breach. You must, you know, if it says that you're
supposed... And it's very little point in that exercise anyway, isn't there? The courts are just useless, and if they think there's conflict, they'll just give custody to the mother anyway. So.
Well, it doesn't quite get to that stage. Not there are some judges who will reverse custody on that basis. If you go back to court perhaps two or three times, and the mother shows a complete disregard for the for the court orders, and that's what you're endeavouring to show, that the mother has a complete disregard, and you know, often they do. They don't care, you know, what the judge has said or what the orders are. They're only concerned with their own situation and keeping control of the child. The child means money to them.
So the important thing here, I guess, is for parents just to, you know, put that sort of stuff aside, at least for Christmas. You know, like we can talk about, you know, World War One, where they had a ceasefire for the day. You know, let's do that in 2009, where mum and dad have a ceasefire for the day, and it is, you know, their thoughts and emotions and feelings and are all around their children.
Of course.
And, you know, that would be the perfect scenario.
It's not perfect, but step forward in the right direction. And maybe some parents might find that they enjoyed having some time to themselves on Christmas Day or with other members of the family whilst the kids were off with dad or mum or vice versa. And, you know, maybe they find their relationship might improve between each other and with the children as well.
Exactly.
Which is what we hope for, and that's all we're asking for. It's not a woman against the man argument. It's about being fair with each other, being fair with the kids, letting the children have the best of both worlds.
Yep, showing some compassion, showing some compromise, and showing some true love for your children, and respecting what your children's needs are.
That's right. That's right. Anyway, the other news that I tried to get out of the Attorney General's office, apparently Professor Richard Chisholm has already handed down his findings from the inquiry that he undertook into family violence in the family court. He apparently gave his conclusions to a family court conference in Melbourne, I think on the 9th and 10th of November.
Mm-hmm.
I rang the Attorney General's office, I was put through to the family law section, and I asked for a copy of the report. The answer was, well, we haven't decided when we're going to publish it, and if we do publish it.
Really?
So I've asked people to contact the Attorney General's office to try and put some questions in. You know, when is it going to be published? Are we going to have a look at it? Or is it all a wasted effort and it's going to be kept secret?
Well, that is unfortunate. And I encourage everyone also to contact the Attorney General in regards to this, because it's imperative that this information gets out.
Well, it has to be, doesn't it? We've all put in a lot of work into that, and for them to indicate it was an indication that they may not publish. But the other rumours that we have heard about it, and of course the rumours abounding all over the place once they don't publish, is that they are going to take a much stronger view of conflict, and that will be the new reason, or the better endorsed reason for stopping contact if there is conflict between the parents. And we all know how that's going to turn out, because, you know, it only takes one parent to cause the conflict, but very rarely does the family court actually determine who does cause the conflict and act against them.
Yeah, well, they're very rarely a court where proof is needed, is it?
Well, no, it's mainly just she said, he said, and the tendency seems to be to believe the parent who has the children, who is normally the mother.
Yep, yep. And I guess in some respect this comes back to the Christmas scenario where, you know, who has the children has the control over how these children spend the Christmas.
That's right, that's right.
And, you know, again, it's important to remind these parents that what is in the best interest of the children, especially at such a family-orientated time, is that the children do get to spend time with their entire family.
Yes, of course they need to. I think that's a given that most of us understand, but unfortunately some mums, not all, but
no.
Some mothers and some fathers,
yeah, exactly.
Act in the same way, as if they own the children and they don't need to see the other parent. And that's the real crime of it all.
It is indeed.
Hmm.
All right, we'll wrap it up there, Sue. Thank you for your time.
Now, I wish everybody a happy Christmas again, or Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
And the same to you.
We'll look forward to hearing from everyone in the new year, and it is going to be a very, very busy year ahead.
No worries.
All yeah, just one last question.
Hold on. John's back. John's back.
Yeah, when you say it's a big year, what do you mean? And what do you think of the whole family law reform situation in Australia?
Well, there's going to be some changes brought in, obviously. I think that's been pretty clearly expressed already. We're going to be fighting that, obviously, because if they try to roll it back, I think they will have a million votes against them on that matter or more. It's going to need everybody's efforts. Everyone's going to have to put in and sort of email and talk to their politicians and things like that. Child support is running amok. I'm getting a lot of complaints from second wives and partnerships whereby child support is actually accessing their files via the bank and via their private investigation scrutiny that's going on, and they are releasing private details about partners, new wives, second wives, to the other party. And that is a clear breach of privacy. It's absolutely outrageous, some of the decisions they're making on the basis of partnership income.
Oh, really?
God, so that's
never
another
ends.
Area.
And this government's just made that institution worse.
Oh yes, of course, Aaron. Of course, we've got this huge Damocles sword hanging over us of this an identity card, which is the old Australia card business, that they want one card to cover everything, which includes child support, medical issues, Centrelink, all those, and it'll all be coordinated instead of us having some privacy as far as our tax file number goes. It'll be open slather for any government bureaucracy.
Well, more to watch out for 2010. That was Sue Price from the Men's Rights Agency. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, John.
Okay, we'll be back in a short moment. We'll be talking with Warwick Marsh from the Fatherhood Foundation. We'll be back.
I'm dreaming tonight of a place I love even more than I usually do. And although I know it's a long way back, I promise you I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree. Christmas Eve will find me where the love light leads. I'll be home for Christmas if only in my Christmas, you can plan on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree. Christmas Eve. Thank you.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
And on the line we have at the Fatherhood Foundation's very own Warwick Marsh. Merry Christmas, Warwick.
And a happy new year to you, Ian.
Mate, we're all tripping over our syllables here this morning. but too much Christmas cheer in the air, I fear. Excuse my alliteration there. So what's your Christmas message for us, mate? What have you got to say? Hopefully we can have some joy and Christmas cheer out of you. The other interviews have all been necessarily a little bit gloomy.
Mm.
But we're hoping that you can come up with some positive Christmas joy for us all here at Dads on the Air.
I must say, I heard the last little bit of Sue's interview, and I think she's right on the money. I think that 2010 will be a very interesting year and a difficult year in the sense that we will have to have all hands on deck because we will be fighting, I believe, for sanity in the coming election, 2010. And I must say, I am quite excited by Tony Abbott's elevation. I've met with Tony several times over the years, and I think he's quite predisposed to fathers and to men's issues. He actually came along to a function we held in March of last year, and you know, he came along of his own volition and to inquire to see what the story with the different men's groups were in regards to men's health. And he's also been supportive, just for the record, of our dear friend Professor John McDonald's efforts with the men's shed in western suburbs of Sydney. So
That's all very healthy. That's very healthy, and he is a family man. He does make a point of, you know, having photos taken of himself and his family.
He's a family man. He describes himself as a social conservative, which of course it makes our feminist friends
cringe
and, yes, and be quite grate their teeth with disgust. But essentially that's code for he actually believes in family. He believes in mothers and fathers, and children need a mother and a father, which of course amongst some of the elite within our parliaments is quite a strange idea. But of course it's common sense and it's biological sense and it's the fundamentals of human biology. So, you know, I'm actually quite excited about it. I think it's going to be a very close election. I think the gap is going to narrow. So I'm sort of saying this to back up Sue's words. I do think we'll have to have all hands on deck, and it'll be interesting to see if in fact the Rudd government actually do listen to the men of Australia and the fathers of Australia. Certainly they're going to release, I think they're going to release a men's health policy today in Melbourne, I've heard in the grapevine, and that'll be a good thing, but obviously you've got to do more than release a men's health policy, because you've got to do something. And
you've
of course,
got to enact it.
You've got to enact it, and you've got to bring some actual things on the table, and I think it's a good time for us as men's, I think next year...
You want to make a bet that the men's health policy won't recommend reformation or reform of the Child Support Agency or the Family Court or the Federal Magistrate Service, all the major threats to the men's health?
Yeah. Well, I think that this is an issue that has to be addressed. I'm not going to make any bets. I'd probably lose them at that present money, I'm guessing, against you, John, on that issue. But the bottom line is, I think it's going to be a very interesting year, and I think it'll actually be a year for us to speak up with one voice next year for some sanity for families. And I know that Ed Dabrowski's working on a mensvote.com website, which I think it will be used to let people know, from a men's point of view, what the major parties are doing. And I'm certainly planning to do some interviews with both Rudd and Abbott, possibly for a TV program later in the year, for the Christian Channel and for community radio, Christian community radio. So, look, I think it's going to be an interesting year. But as far as the Christian cheer, well, listen, for Christmas, the bottom line is that Jesus is the reason for the season, and he brought joy to the world. He brought peace to this world. He came to give us hope and give us a reason to exist, a reason to believe. And in a world that's full of injustice and, man's inhumanity to man, we need to understand that Jesus came to show love and to give peace. And you know, the message of the angels when they sang to the shepherds was peace on earth, goodwill towards men. And I think Christmas time is a time for peace, and it's a time for goodwill. It can be a very difficult time for separated fathers. I'm a happily married man for the last 35 years now, actually. Celebrating my 35th wedding anniversary of the day, 5 children, 2 grandchildren.
Oh, that's wonderful. Congratulations,
Mike. Yeah, thank you so much. But look, I do feel for single dads, and I know this program deals a lot with the issues for single dads, and Christmas time is a very difficult time of the year, especially if you're a non-custodial father, and you're sitting at home at Christmas waiting for a phone call, or maybe not even expecting a phone call because somehow or other your children have been isolated from you by this whole parental alienation syndrome. It's a very difficult time of the year, but I'm telling you too the same as I tell anybody else. Jesus came to bring hope and to bring joy, and this is a time to look up and to see that God has not finished with man, and God loves us all, and God wants us to enjoy his power and his love and his grace, and that's what Christmas is all about.
Hallelujah. What a great Christmas message.
Well, it's a bit hard to top that, so we might as well say goodbye. Oh, dear. You're fulfilling your pastoral role there, Warwick.
If I can do it once a year and I can talk about Jesus on Dad's in there once a year, I guess that's not too bad, is it?
Yes, he's throwing the pearls amongst the heathens.
Eh? I'm glad you didn't say swine.
Oh, dear.
No, that's a great message, Warwick.
If I can say this, it's great to work with you guys. I honour you guys for what you're doing. I think I know what it's like to produce a weekly newsletter. Every week I produce a newsletter that goes out to well over 2,000 dads here in Australia and around the world. And it's a very comprehensive newsletter, single dads, granddads, and you can, you know, if you want to register online, you go to fatherhood.org.au. That's our website. But what I'm saying this is not to give a plug for my email, but to honour you guys for your work. Since 2000, you've been every week a broadcast for fathers, a broadcast to give fathers hope, to articulate the struggle that fathers are facing today, and the different health issues that men face. And I really want to congratulate you all. Philip and the whole team, Ian, John, have we any, who else is
Peter, Greg.
Peter Vandervoort, yeah, Peter, Greg. Peter, Greg Andreessen.
Cameron down in Melbourne when Bill he gets himself
Bill
together.
Cable. Bill Cable, who's not here this week.
Bill Cable. Bill. And of course,
Lindsay Jackal, of course, couldn't live without him.
Lindsay Jackal is a real hero in the men's movement. And, you know, I just want to say thank you to all your hard work. I'm sure you're like me, you don't get a lot of thanks. So I want to say thank you, and I appreciate your work. I don't always listen to the program. It's not because I don't believe in it, just because I'm so busy trying to produce other stuff.
I'm interested.
It's awesome what you guys are doing, so keep it up, and God bless you, and have a great Christmas and a happy new year.
Same. Thanks a lot, Warwick.
Yeah, thanks, all Warwick. That's
thank
great.
You.
Bye.
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 Now.
Christmas. special.
We're back with Dad on the Air.
Radio Sweden, 30 minutes of news and insights from Sweden, brought to you by Radio Sweden. In Broadcasting House in Stockholm, I'm Ulla Engberg. And now something different. With Sweden's high rate of divorce, many relationships that involve children can end in bitter custody battles through the courts, with those on the losing side finding the decisions hard to take. It's even harder for those couples of mixed nationalities, where a parent can end up separated from their children by thousands of miles. It's led to a growth in the number of parents taking the drastic step of kidnapping their child. Our reporter Dave Russell met a father on the receiving end of an abduction, and with Father's Day in Sweden this Sunday, he met a dad who's campaigning for better rights for fathers in the Swedish courts.
Sweden's divorce rate is one of the highest in the world, and for those with children, the pain of a breakup can have devastating consequences. While many couples reach agreements over shared custody, increasingly for a sizable minority, a bitter breakup can lead to a long battle for custody and visitation rights. And for the losing party, a decision by the family court can be difficult to accept. Michael Bogdan is a professor in private and comparative international law at Lund University in southern Sweden.
Losing the child is much more traumatic than losing a battle for money, for example. And that affects also the behavior of the parties in such disputes, who tend to come with all kinds of accusations, not always well-founded. They accuse the other party of being an alcoholic or being abusive and so on. So one has really to be careful when judging such disputes.
In today's modern world, more and more couples have mixed nationalities, and in some of those custody cases, a parent, women as well as men, can take the extra drastic step of abducting their child back to their native country. The numbers are surprising. In Sweden, there are around 100 recorded cases of international child-parent abduction every year, equally divided between kidnaps to Sweden, usually by the mother, and kidnaps from Sweden, usually by the foreign-born father. One such case involved George Pessor, who lived in Sweden for 12 years. An Australian, he now resides back home in Melbourne with his two sons, whom he'd won sole custody of in a family court in Sweden in 2004, following a bitter legal battle with his Swedish ex-wife, whom he says accused him at the time of sexually abusing and trying to murder their children. Under twice-yearly visitation rights agreed by the family court in Australia under the Hague Convention, the boys flew to Sweden to visit their mother for a third time in October 2008, but confirming the 42-year-old father's worst fears that they would be kidnapped by his ex-wife, Frank and Andre failed to show for their flight back to Australia. They'd been abducted by their mother. Due to lack of help from the authorities, it was 6 months before George Pessor was to see his children again, when he took matters into his own hands.
I alerted the authorities both in Sweden and Australia and had to go back to court various occasions in Australia to receive recovery orders and so forth. And even in Sweden, I had to be here present for proceedings regarding the Hague Convention matter, so that the legal issue of the children being returned back to the father, which is me, and back to Australia, were finalised as well. So it was quite a lengthy, should we say, event, and quite traumatic, very, very difficult. It's a, what should we say, it becomes a very steep learning curve, learning to deal with all the authorities, both in regarding the Hague Convention, as well as the police in different jurisdictions, and so forth. So not an easy thing. When it came to the police actually taking action towards this, it took quite some time, and there were cost issues from the police and a question of resources and so forth. So in the end of the day, I had to really sort of take matters into my own hands to then realise that, look, I'm not really going to receive the help that is required from the Swedish police or the Australian police for that matter. And basically sort of took the decision, look, I've really got to come to Sweden and actually do it myself. And thank God it only took about 9 days before I located the kids. As it turns out, they were at the grandparents' place.
obviously in an emotional moment.
Absolutely. It was unbelievable, actually. It's very, very hard to describe, you know. Very hard to describe. And at the same time, very hard to, what you say, the situation as it was. You know, I had not heard anything for 6 months where my children were. I didn't have a clue if they were dead or alive, to be honest with you. It was just, it's amazing. It's one of those things, you know, if you have, for example, a close relative who passes away, that's a traumatic experience. But however, you can start working on that because you know what's happened. You can see it. And you can work forward, so to speak, whereas in this situation, you just don't know. It's very, very traumatic, actually. And I really do feel for parents that are in the same situation, you know.
George Pesso's traumatic experience is now out in a book, Not Without My Sons, written by Swedish journalist and author Ingrid Carlqvist, who became interested in the case when the children were missing through the blogosphere.
I found out about his situation. I saw it on a blog, and I had just started blogging myself, and I really felt for him, and I thought it was so horrible that the Swedish journalists, they were not interested in his case. They always like to write about fathers who had kidnapped the children. They write about the mothers and their struggle. But he was a man, he was a father, his children were kidnapped by a mother and a Swedish mother. And I believe that Swedish journalists, they're a bit biased. They think that if the children are in Sweden and they're with their mother, it can't be too bad. So they just wouldn't write about him. And I mean, the children were kidnapped. They were not, that's not a good situation for any child because there are so many other children kidnapped today. I think there are about 30 or 35 children living in Sweden kidnapped by their mothers at this very moment. And nobody does anything. I mean, the police, they say that they do things, but they really don't do so much. And the fathers, nobody cares about the fathers. It's just that, oh, he's a father. The children are okay with their mother.
Any cultural media bias is exacerbated in these cases by the dual nationality of the children. Professor Michael Bogdan again.
And nowadays, in these kind of mixed marriages or mixed couples where they have different nationalities, usually the child would have a double nationality. And from the point of view of the country to which the child has been taken, they consider that child to be their citizen. Even the mass media in such a country tends to look at the child as the child has been taken home. I mean, the Swedish mass media are not an exception. We had a case a couple of years ago from South Africa where a Swedish mother took the child to Sweden illegally. From South Africa, the Swedish newspapers, mass media, they kind of tended to see this, oh, she took the child home, the child is Swedish. While, of course, in the opposite situation, when the child is taken from Sweden, in such a situation, the mass media would tend to say, oh, the Swedish child has been abducted abroad. That's one of the things when you have double nationality.
The effects of international child abduction on a child can, of course, be devastating. But the effects can be just as damaging from the fallout of bitter custody battles where the parents haven't taken that drastic step of abduction. Sophie Arno is a psychologist at Save the Children.
The fighting part is very hard. Actually, it's the most difficult thing with a divorce, to see the parents not getting along. Sometimes a divorce can give a sense of relief for everybody involved, but in most cases, separation is also loss. It's loss of the family that you have known, and it's also loss of the future that you have counted on. Connected to that loss is usually a strong sense of sadness, and sometimes also anger and confusion and worries about sad parents. Also, children, they take a lot of responsibility for things that happen. So when you see your parents being sad, being upset, it worries the child a lot. And they will go to great extents trying to take care of things, trying to take care of the parents, putting their own feelings and their own needs to the side.
While most custody battles are messy, they don't end up with one parent illegally abducting their child abroad. However, for those parents, mostly fathers, who lose a custody case, access to see their children can still be a real problem in a country the size of Sweden. Inspired by Fathers for Justice in England, 38-year-old Ulf Andersson from Småland founded the fathers' rights group Papparättsgruppen in response to what he sees as the gender bias against fathers in the custody courts. His daughter lives over 600 kilometres away.
The rulings said that my daughter should reside with her mother and that we should have joint custody. This joint custody is nothing else but a pretty words on a paper. It really doesn't say anything. The mother of my daughter knew about my economical situation and that I would have a very, very hard time to visit my daughter because of the distance. It all went very bad. I haven't seen my daughter for, I think it's 5 or 6 years now. I don't know anything about my daughter. Nothing at all. I don't know her favorite food, her favorite movie, her favorite actor, her favorite color, what kind of hobbies she has. I don't know the name of her best friend. Does she have a best friend at all? I don't know anything about my daughter. I only know how she's doing at school. I've decided to try to do a creative thing of all this sorrow I have in my heart. And that was to start Papperetsgruppen. Maybe I can't do anything for my own child, or in my own case, but maybe I can help other fathers, at least supporting them. Because in society, there is no place for fathers at all to turn to.
The tears are filling up their glasses. No expression, no expression.
Ulf Andersson, Papperetsgruppen, last in that report by Radio Sweden's Dave Russell. You can hear the interviews in this report in full on our website at radiosweden.org. And if you missed the beginning of the program, you can find all our stories on the website, which is updated 7 days a week.
It's Christmas time. There's no need to be afraid. At Christmas time, we let in light and we banish shame.
In our world of plenty, we can spread a smile of joy. Throw your arms around the world at Christmas time. But say a prayer, pray for. When you're having fun.
drive so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress. 1-300-853-437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
And we're talking with Ed Dabrowski from the Shared Parenting Council Australia. There, Ed.
Yes, I am. Good morning, John, and good morning to all your listeners.
Thanks so much for joining Dad's on the Air, and Merry Christmas to you.
And Merry Christmas to you, and the best of the season to everybody out there.
Oh, good, good, good. So, look, it's a wonderful time of year for most people, and for some people it's a bit of a rough trot. What's your general words of wisdom and advice?
I would say to everyone out there, and I know that a lot of people are hurting. They're hurting because they can't see their children. They're hurting because they feel let down and disappointed about their broken relationships. Grandparents as well, I really feel for you because maybe you're having trouble seeing your grandchildren. And what I say to everyone is just be kind to each other. Be kind and be reflective and pause a little. And remember that it's the children who we have to consider. It's the children who are hurt the most. It's the children whose voices are not heard. It's the children who are the weakest amongst us and the most vulnerable and need our help. So be kind to each other. Do good works, good things for your children, and parents to each other. You know, let each other see the kids and spend that time with the children. It's really important for their sake.
So it really is a time where some people, and it's men or women, but custodial parents will sometimes use the children to deny them contact with the other parent because they know it will cause maximum hurt at this time of year.
That's right. And what I would say to people who think that they, you know, can inflict the greatest pain on the other partner, the other parent, what good does it do? I mean, It hurts the children. The children ultimately are the ones who suffer because they don't have that special time and those memories. Alienating and segregating and distancing children from a parent does no good for children. And I'd also ask people to reflect on themselves, because often when we want to inflict pain on others, it's because we have we actually have a low self-esteem and a self-loathing. So many parents out there actually don't like themselves, and they project that self-loathing onto the other parent. So I say, just pause for a little, be reflective. You know, we all make mistakes. We all do things that are wrong. We're not perfect. We're only human beings, and we need to be compassionate. We need to be generous to each other. We need to be kind. We need to care for our children, that they can have the best relationship and the best time and the best memories with both parents.
And of course, a lot of parents would justify their behaviour in denying contact, their children contact with the other party. You know, they would put the other person down as he's this, he's that, he did this, he did that, he didn't pay his child support, or he hit me 20 years ago, or whatever. Or you know, there's always some excuse to blacken the other party.
That's right, and you know, we really have to look at ourselves. I know it's hard for some parents to accept personal responsibility. You know, maybe there's fault on both sides in the relationship.
There usually is.
maybe one person feels especially aggrieved. Maybe they were a kind of an innocent party or an unsuspecting party when the relationship broke, and they feel aggrieved. But using our children as the go-between, using our children as weapons to inflict pain on the other parent, does enormous damage to children. The children need to be insulated from this aggression and this ill feeling to the other parent. Really, it means we need to work on ourselves. We need to take stock of ourselves. And I'd ask parents who, you know, are angry with the other parent and want to lash out in some way, and that might mean denying contact over Christmas, I'll just say, just pause and look at yourself and say, look, is perhaps the problem me? You know, have I not been the best, or am I too hard-hearted? Am I not forgiving enough? We need to be generous to each other because we are frail. We are human beings, and we're a motley crew as human beings. We come into the world without a script, without a rule book, and we try to do the best we can and try to live our lives the best we can, and we make lots of mistakes, and nobody's perfect. So I just ask all those parents out there to be really compassionate to the other side, and do it. If you're not doing it for you, do it for your children. Do it for the kids.
And I think even a lot of people who perpetrating this sort of behaviour don't actually realise what they're doing, that it's become so habitual and so ingrained and that to, you know, say negative things about, you know, the children's father usually, but, you know, sometimes it's the children's mother, that these sort of patterns of behaviour are so entrenched that they don't even realise that the harm they're doing.
You're absolutely right, John. We all have our stories of pain and being aggrieved, and grandparents are the same. You know, many grandparents are antagonistic to one of them, a mother or a father. Perhaps, you know, the wars between the family members will continue for a long time. But when we repeat these scripts, when we go through the same pattern again and then again and again, and we replay the pain and the hurt and what somebody did, you know, this person did something to me, this person hurt me. When we do that, we get locked in our own story, and by being locked in story, we can't progress. We can't be the best parent we want to be for our children. We can't move ahead in our lives, even though we need to, for our children's sake and our own sakes. So I'd just ask parents and even grandparents out there who are having trouble reconciling the hurt that they feel, this pain that they feel, to simply think about what you're saying and doing, and try not to repeat the scripts. Try not to be locked in story all the time. Try to step out of yourself and outside of that for a moment, and just think about the children and how they must be feeling and what's best for them. And, you know, ultimately, whether we agree that a parent is a good parent or a bad parent, or we have reservations, children love both their parents. They see both their parents through their own eyes, and they see the image of themselves reflected in the face of their mother, and they see the image of themselves reflected in the face of their father. And it's not for anyone to deny that.
Every parent's a good parent if they're your parents.
That's right.
Yeah. They're your parents, they're good parents, you know. It doesn't matter what anyone says parents. About them.
Yeah. You should see his parents, they're gorgeous. Yeah. His dad's like an older version of him, pottering around the party, beaming at everybody.
It's a hoot. Yeah, he's a shocker dancing with all the young girls. He's a shocker.
No, he's 80. He's
84.
Man, just there's a dad. Never say die. You
know, and I would say too, John, if I may, having been in Sydney last year for the wonderful World Youth Day celebration, where we had 250,000 youth teeming all over the city of Sydney, and when you look into the faces of those young people and the promise and the hope for tomorrow that, you know, is in those young people, we need to take stock of that and reflect that this is our future. You know, these young people who are coming through who are aspiring to goodness and good works and being the best human beings they can possibly be. And our children, all our children, will be the future. We have to make it the best we possibly can for them. We have to give them the best start in life. They deserve that. And if one parent's made mistakes, or the other one has made, or we've both made mistakes, put it aside, just set it aside for a minute and let the children enjoy their time and their special bond with each other and grandparents as well, because grandparents are very important.
And peace and goodwill to all men and all women. Peace and goodwill. Now, we wouldn't be dads on the air if we didn't mention family law reform, of course, which seems to be going backwards at a million miles an hour. What's your take from the Shared Parenting Council's position on all of this?
Yeah, well, John, it is a bit disappointing. I mean, we had bipartisan support from all sides of government for the reforms that went through in 2006 to family law, and then also to the child support reforms that came a little later. Now, there is still very strong support on all sides of politics to have shared parenting and to promote that. However, there is a core group in the current government who are setting out to basically reverse things, or at least to shift the power balance so that ultimately dads don't fare as well with outcomes, with shared parenting and custody outcomes. So there is that push, and we're seeing it in the form of multiple inquiries. It's hard to change the law. So what do? You throw inquiry after inquiry at changing the law and trying to drum up enough.
Oh, and these inquiries, some of them are so outrageous. The Rudd government has taken to new heights the old saying, never hold an inquiry unless you know the answer. And, of course, they knew the answer before they started any of these inquiries because they're completely rigged, basically.
Well, that's quite true, John, unfortunately, that these inquiries were started, we believe, with a strong agenda to insert things into the Family Law Act that would reduce shared parenting. We already have judges across Australia utilising reports. There's one in particular by Jennifer McIntosh and retired Justice Chisholm on shared parenting.
And they're notoriously opposed to shared parenting. So why would you put such clearly bigoted, you know, people with such an agenda into these positions?
Well, I think the harmful thing is that this report, which was not adopted, it wasn't welcomed or accepted, it's just something that is noted, I think, has nevertheless crept into the family court. So we're finding fathers who even had shared parenting by agreement, but then decided that they needed to formalise their matter by going to court and, you know, naively thought, oh, we'll do the right thing, went off to court, find that judges and lawyers are slamming this report down on the table and saying, this says that shared parenting is bad for you, and then they're having their time reduced. It's outrageous.
And this is a report that's never been publicly released as yet. This is the Richard Chisholm report that you're talking about.
Well, I'm talking about a report that was done by Jennifer McIntosh and Chisholm about 2 years ago.
Oh, right.
But there's more work that's been done since, of course. But in any case, that report is the one that people seem to rely on.
Oh, that the family court's relying on.
Unfortunately, apart from the sample size being incredibly small and not indicative of the population, the comparisons that were made were, I think, you know, with respect, a little disingenuous. The comparison that was made was, or the claim that was made was that children in shared parenting arrangements are highly stressed. And if there's some conflict amongst the parents, then shared parenting is a bad thing. Now, the comparison was made to the population of children in the general community, that, you know, the greater population. The proper comparison should have been to the population of divorced kids, because what we know about all children of divorce is that they're all stressed. They all have elevated levels of stress because their world has been shattered, their family unit has been shattered, and it's quite normal to see that these kids, you know, are having to adapt and cope and have greater stressors in life. So if you compare shared parenting kids with those kids, the comparison would be unremarkable. And in fact, it might even be the other way, that these shared parenting kids have lower levels of stress. However, Jennifer McIntosh and Justice Chisholm saw fit to compare them to the greater population. So of course they were going to stand out and look, look like things were not so good. So,
well, Blind Freddy could have told you what sort of report these people would come up with. I mean, both of them were notorious in their opposition to shared parenting. So why would the government put these sort of people into what was supposedly a neutral inquiry? How can they make any claim that they're neutral? Richard Chisholm's the one that ridiculed separated fathers at a family law conference and is notorious for his opposition to it.
That's right, and you know, you also have to look at the Darcy Freeman case that was talked about in the media. Now, we won't say a lot about that because I understand that's still going through the courts as a criminal trial. It's something that we won't comment on. However, it is notable that the government considered that case of a father who, you know, it was a very tragic case.
It was a tragic death where a father threw a kid over a bridge here in Melbourne, just some months back.
Apparently something that happened in the court that day made him snap. And
and the Chief Justice promptly came out and said it wasn't the court's fault.
Well, that's interesting that a person would have to come out and make that claim as if there is something perhaps to hide, perhaps. So that's a tragedy. That's a terrible, terrible tragedy.
We're running out of time, Ed, so if we'll just need to wind up. Maybe on a happier note. Sorry, Ed.
All right. Well, look... you know, I know that separation and divorce is hard for people. Losing your children, not having time with your kids, is incredibly difficult. It really is very difficult. And I would say to people, over this Christmas, make it easier for your kids, and don't think about harming the other parent. Think about improving and helping your children enjoy that time, and let's just put the animosities away, and be kind and generous to each other. The world will be a better place if we do.
That's a good note to end on. Be kind and generous to each other. Peace and goodwill to each other. Just be nice for once. All right, that was Ed Dabrowski from the Shared Parenting Council Australia. Did a wonderful job as the federal president of the organisation for quite some years, and one of the more humble and more charming of the toilers in the field. Thank you so much for coming on to Dad's on the Air.
You're welcome, John, and thanks to you and all your listeners out there, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, and to everyone over in WA. All right, that's it for Dad's on the Air for the 22nd of December 2009. You'll have Bob Country on, coming on very shortly. I hope everyone has a happy new year if you don't catch us next week. And we're almost winding up for Year of the Year. Don't forget, you can listen to this on dadsontheair.net. That's www.dadsontheair.net. You can catch all our recent shows. All right, thank you so much. We'll be back.
With that.